The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, some of you out there might harbour the dreams of someday summiting Everest, and I can just imagine that sense of achievement and pride on reaching the roof of the world. What you probably are not envisaging is having to pick up and transport your own poo. Nevertheless, that is what aspiring summiters will be required to do from now on. Johnny Ward of One Step Forward has summited the world's highest mountain, as well as the other six highest peaks. He's been to the North and South Pole, and he's visited every country in the world. And you might remember we spoke to him some months ago on this programme during some downtime with his family in Thailand. He joins me once again. Johnny, good morning.
Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. I was just wondering, you know, the idea of summiting Everest, but knowing that that you've got your own poo in your backpack. I mean, would it diminish the experience?
I think after I spoke to you guys last time, I'd just come back from the South Pole. And when you're in Antarctica, you have to do that when you're climbing the mountains in Antarctica anyway. So for people who've done other big mountains in either Antarctica or in North America, that's pretty standard practice already.
Yeah. So you are given or you take with you what's called a wag bag or a number of wag bags. What are wag bags? How do they work?
Yeah, exactly. So it's some special plastic container thing. And then if you can be bothered, you can carry up a kind of fold up chair between the team that would act as a kind of toilet on demand. And then you pop your, this is basically a plastic bag with some snazzy materials. And then you would have your toilet experience and it's got some special minerals or something in it to deodorize. But actually, because it's so bloody cold, it's minus 30, minus 40 when you're up at these high altitudes, everything's just frozen solid regardless. So it's not great. It's not beautiful, but it's not as bad as you envisage.
Now, there have been kind of, if not rules, toileting protocols, because it's not as if you ever go straight from the bottom to the top. There are a number of camps along the way and different rules.
Yeah, that's right. So Everest, when I did it, 10 months ago, it took the best part of 2 months to climb. And I think a lot of the media stuff with the toilet issue aren't really aware. Like when you're at base camp, which takes 2 weeks, that's the first 2 weeks to get to base camp. Once you're at base camp, you're kind of based at base camp as you go up the mountain and back down again, up higher and back down again. And at base camp, they do have actual facilities that get flown in and flown out. So it's like a functioning, it's almost like a functioning little town, and stuff does get taken out of there. So I think when they're talking about all this, these new protocols, it'll be when you're high up the mountain on your summit attempt.
So you have effectively latrines or portaloos,
exactly,
or whatever they might be at base camp. Now, that's base camp one. When you move up to two, what happens?
So that's base camp, and then you've got camp 1, 2, 3, 4, and then summit. So you've got four camps after base camp. So camp one is pretty basic. You dig a hole. And then camp two is kind of a larger camp where all the different expeditions congregate again. And that, again, has latrines, is the right word for it. Yeah, it's also got latrines at camp two. So you're kind of okay. And then really it's only camp three and camp four. So that'll be like basically your summit push. You don't go up to camp three or camp four apart from your summit push. So it's only 2 or 3 days you're talking about. Yeah.
Now, there were instructions that you should dig a hole and bury it, very much like a cat would do. But the problem is the supposition was that you'd bury it and it would never be seen again, you know, under the ice. But the ice is not as firm as it once was.
No, and they had the similar in Alaska. The highest mountain in North America is a mountain called Denali, and they had the same protocol over the last few decades that you could bury it or launch it down a crevasse in a glacier, and that was all well and good. Obviously, the US is a bit more mindful of the environmental effects. But then what happened over the last 5 or 10 years is, as the glacier moves, global warming and everything, the glacier was starting to spit out what had been lost in the glacier higher up the mountain. So that's when the American National Park Association, whatever they're called, they mandate that you also have to, whatever you bring up, you bring down, let's say.
Yeah. Now, the other problem, I suppose, is that the normal decomposition effects at, say, sea level and warm temperatures and so on, they would be a lot slower at low temperatures. So your poo might be hanging around a long time.
Forever, basically. Especially if you're talking about camp three and camp four on Everest. Camp three is, 7,500 meters? And Camp 4 is 8,000 meters, so it'll literally be there forever. Yeah, because it never goes any warmer, I guess, than minus 20, minus 30.
Now, I know that there was that famous picture of people queuing to summit Everest, which was a unique set of circumstances that gave rise to that. But it also gave rise in the popular mind that this is a bit of a doddle, really, and nothing could be further from the truth.
That is so true, Pat. It was Nimsdai, the guy who did the 14 Peaks documentary on Netflix, that took that photo. That was like a perfect storm. Normally you have a kind of couple 2 week window for Everest, and whatever expedition you're part of, you choose your strategy to summit, and normally it's dribs and drabs going up each day. Some people fail, some people don't, and over a period of weeks. But with that famous photograph of the queue for Everest, there was a storm right late in the season, and there was another storm coming, so everyone had to go on one day. So it was a perfect storm, quite literally. It's not like that when you're actually climbing. And I know that a lot of people sit at home like armchair critics and want to say that, oh yeah, anyone can do it now, and it's a rich guy's play thing. And like I've spoken to you before, but I've done a lot of crazy things, like cycled continents and run across countries, and Everest was far and away the hardest thing I've ever done and probably ever will do. So I'm quite protective. I feel quite protective of the experience when I hear like about some guy in his mum's basement saying anyone can do it.
Far from the truth. And that feeling of exhilaration when you get to the top, irrespective of what might be in your backpack, I mean, that has got to be the most extraordinary experience imaginable.
It's pretty special. And, you know, like, my whole life has been dedicated to these adventures and stuff. And normally it's on to the next one, on to the next one. But when I was on the summit of Everest, I was like overwhelmed with emotions, to be honest. I was trying to make a video for my nephew and niece and for my mom and everything. I could barely talk. I was just in floods of tears. And I wasn't expecting to be like that at all, you know. But it's just something you've heard about as a kid and da-da-da, and suddenly you're at the top, you've done it. And I really struggled to deal with the emotion. And then, you've got these horrible, like I'm sure you've heard before, most people die coming down. So you've got the pride of finishing, the relief of finishing, and then the reality that you're knackered and you've got to come down the thing.
Yeah. It's extraordinary. As you mentioned, so many people have died on Everest. And one of my texters said, bring back your own poo, sure they don't even retrieve dead bodies, which often might be the case because they're irretrievable. You know, if someone goes down a crevasse, there's no one going to go after them into the icy depths of a crevasse.
That's it. And again, these are the kind of things that the media likes to, I mean, negativity generates clicks, right? But the reality is, if and when people die on Everest, if it's on anywhere near the main area that you climb through, of course, they bring the bodies down. But as you say, when they're falling a crevasse or slide down a glacier like kilometers away, it's just too dangerous to salvage them. As part of the gig, I guess, when you sign up.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're obviously talking about the more novel aspect of the Nepalese rules, which may or may not be enforced with fines or whatever it might be. I mean, we're talking about doing the DNA of dog poo to identify dog owners whose dogs foul the pavements. I can't imagine the Nepalese doing DNA of climbers poo to find out who's been careless. But there's a bigger problem, I suppose, than poo, which is just general litter. Climbing litter all over the mountain.
Yeah, although to be honest, Pat, I know again this is something that the media had picked up on over the last 4 or 5 years, but the entire experience of climbing Everest for me, apart from a couple of isolated areas, it's pristine. The whole thing's pristine. I know a lot of people like to sit at home and be like, oh, it's filthy, like we're ruining the environment. It's really not like that. Just Camp 4, which is at 8,000 meters, and the weather there is brutal. So tents get destroyed and all your gear gets destroyed. And you can see that people have left destroyed stuff there to carry on with their expedition. But that's really the only place. The rest of it's pristine.
Yeah. And that area would be how big, you know, where the litter might be, the tents and all that?
That's a good question. Let's say a couple of football pitches, maybe.
That's all. On a huge mountain.
So on a huge mountain. Yeah. And do you know, Pat, on that note, like, I really feel it's easy to sit at home and criticize these things on a mountain that people will probably never attempt, because obviously it's expensive and you might die and all the rest. But then you go to a mountain like Kilimanjaro, which is much more accessible for people, both through the price point and the ease of the mountain. It's 10 times filthier than Everest could, 1,000 times filthier than Everest. But for some reason, it doesn't get the clickbait and the headlines. And I believe it's because people don't want to criticize that, because one day they might actually have a crack at Kilimanjaro and they'd be hypocrites. But it's easy to criticize Everest knowing you'll never step foot on it.
Well, I'm wondering, Johnny, the last time we spoke to you, you were having downtime with the family. Are you itching for your next adventure?
I am, yeah. I'm actually building a house for my mum here in Thailand at the moment, so that's keeping me busy. It should be finished in another month or two. And then I'm in the process of organising an ultramarathon in December in the Sahara, the Eye of the Sahara Ultra. So I'm trying to launch that in the next probably week or two. And then I want to drag other people along in these adventures, so it's not me suffering alone.
All right. I often use the word indefatigable about people who appear to have lots of energy, but it certainly applies to you, Johnny. And once again, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks, Pat. Nice to speak to you again.
All the best. Johnny Ward of One Step Forward, the man who's done everything, literally, the Explorer's Grand Slam. He's visited every country. He's been to the North and South Pole. He's climbed the seven summits. What an extraordinary set of achievements.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.